Welcome to the Express Soul Health and Wellness Podcast. In each episode, you'll learn from experts about the best practices and technologies to live a happier, healthier, and hopefully a longer life. Here is your host, Claudia Erdenola.
Hello, my name is Claudia Erdenola. I am a professional engineer with a passion for health and wellness. Every week, I bring different doctors and experts into the healthcare industry to teach us better ways in how you and me can take control of our health and live happier, live healthier for longer time. This week, in the spirits of the celebration of the 4th of July, I decided to repost a beautiful interview that the American Legion podcast, which is Tango Alpha Lima, made to my husband, Bruce Robertson. As many of you know, Bruce Robertson is my husband. He is a U.S. veteran from the Air Force, from the Southeast Asia, Vietnam era. So in that podcast, Bruce is telling the stories. When he was young, he was at war. How was that turbulent times? Very, very nice podcast full of history, full of insights, but also, and very important, Bruce is giving a lot of his own experiences into the health and wellness, and how, regardless of any age, he believes that any person can take control of their health and impact the state of health to the optimal in many ways. So this is an interview that you must see. It's beautiful. It's full of history, full of insights about health and wellness. And again, this is the American Legion, which is one of the largest veterans organizations in the United States, and their podcast, which is Tango Alpha Lima. That's the interview with my husband, Bruce Robertson. So here is Bruce Robertson, my husband, with the American Legion podcast. This podcast is brought to you by Espresso Coffee. Espresso Coffee is my brand of coffee, and I made this brand thinking of your health. Why? Because I understand that the commercially available coffees are loaded with pesticides and toxins and molds because they have overprocessed, they have been stored for years, and they're not good for you. So I work with small farmers in Colombia, Honduras, Guatemala, and Brazil. I know where my coffees come from. And those small farmers understand the value of the richness, organic soils, full of antioxidants because they're volcanic. They understand the value of the clean waters, the trees that give the shade to the coffee plants, the birds, everything combined contributes to the final qualities of these amazing coffee beans that are in our Espresso Coffee. So every time you go to Espresso Coffee, you support those farmers, but also support our podcast and this channel when we bring so much content about health and wellness to the population. So go to my website, www.expressolcoffee.com, and for the 4th of July, I have a special code for you. Code FREEDOM at the checkout, all in caps, FREEDOM, for a 25% off your purchase. And remember, always, shipping is free on all purchases over $50. Again, www.expressolcoffee.com. Go with code FREEDOM for the 4th of July and get 25% off your purchase and free shipping over $50. Thanks for your support. And if you like the content of our podcast and you haven't subscribed, please subscribe right here, hit the notification button, and follow us in all our social media outlets. Again, we appreciate your support. Leave us your comments. Give us a 5-star review so we will know how much you like our podcast. And other people will find this content as well. Thank you for your support. And here is the interview with the American Legion. Bruce Robertson, my husband, is the interviewed, is the guest speaker. I hope you find this interview interesting. Happy 4th of July to all of you. God bless.
We're coming in hot with inspiring guests, witty banter, and colorful commentary for today's veterans and military community. This is the Tango Alpha Lima Podcast.
They call me crazy because I'm facing all my giants. They try to scare me into thinking I can fight it. They tell me I should never even think of trying. But that's just me, I'm gonna live out in defiance.
Welcome back, Alphas, to the Tango Alpha Lima Experience.
So with the veteran population of more than 1.6 million in 2020, California is home to a sizable percentage of our nation's veterans. Did you put this in here on purpose?
No.
You just wanted to pay homage to California? Okay, all right. Moving forward, a population that is steadily growing older. So a lot of the focus is on OEF, OIF veterans for obvious reasons, but reality, the bulge in the snake, so to speak, of the veteran population in California is certainly over 55, says Keith Boylan, the Deputy Secretary of Veteran Services at CalVet, just California's veteran organization. Is there a snake in my boot? Like a Disney reference? I like him.
I have nothing about snakes and bulge that is appropriate. So I'm going to pass.
A hard no.
I'm going to pass on that as well.
All right. So other states see this trend mirrored. So between 2021 and 2041, the number of veterans older than 85 is expected to increase by 31%, according to VA data. And part of this is because the overall number of veterans nationwide is actually decreasing. During World War II, military service was common. In subsequent wars, the proportion of the population who served has steadily fallen. So between 2000 and 2018, the number of veterans in the country declined by a third. The bulk of Americans who have served in the military or served in the military served decades ago. So to be clear, Vietnam and Gulf War era veterans represent a different splice of the population than veterans who fought in World War II and Korea. The number of women veterans over the age of 65 is expected to increase by a staggering 237% between 2021 and 2041, according to data from the VA. So radical diversity is also increasing, and the geographic distribution of veterans is shifting. So this means that veterans' care must change as well. Women, for example, have a greater life expectancy than men do. Facts. They tend to live longer, and by living longer, they tend to need more assistance with daily living activities, etc., as quoted in the article. So I think there's a lot of different things here. So Jeff, you're going to have to tell me what you want to pick apart, because the education, the public health professional in me, and aging... There's so many things.
I do not like implanting in my head that women live longer, because that's going to become a self-fulfilling prophecy. If I think that I'm not going to live longer, then I won't live longer. And I object. I find that objectionable. I'm just kidding. It's like, you're not good enough to be a Marine. Now I'm going to live to 172. It's not going to be pretty, but I'm going to make it happen. Yeah, this is California. CalVet's our state VA, I guess, if you will. They're the Veterans Administration of the state. Mm-hmm. And these are going to be our expenses on the VA side are going to definitely go up. When you have an aging population of people that served, and That's just math. And I did some mathing in my head. I did theoretical math, no real numbers, but I'm saying you got a lot of people like that and they need more help. That's more money, because help equals money. So that's military maths. So now I go where you see most comfortable.
Sure. I think there's a lot of important questions here, right? What, if anything, right now, are we anticipating with budget allocations to the VA, right? What kind of initiatives and partnerships are being set out both on the private and the public side to ensure that veterans who are going to be hitting these age brackets are going to be taken care of, right? You're going to see a rise in big pharma, which we've already seen, right? Medical expenses. I mean, our medical expenses alone could be the fourth largest economy, our healthcare system, right? So there is so many different pieces and parts of this. And I think another interesting, just to relevance, right? Like children who are being born right now have a life expectancy of 100. But what's also interesting is there's also facts out there that we have decreased in our life expectancy post-COVID. So there are some very conflicting stats out there about what the quality of life looks like for Americans and American veterans. So there are a lot of big questions. I'm hoping that these are being forecasted out in policy and budget allocations, but we're going to see a big wave of need. And then what that means is if we're having so many people exiting workforce or businesses and entrepreneurship, there's going to be a gap because we're also not populating the, you know, our like, what's the word for it? Like we're not even having as many children to replace the existing workforce, right? So there's a lot of issues here. I am super nerding out. We're going to move forward.
That could be a good issue though. You know, with robotics and AI, maybe we don't need as many people because there ain't going to be jobs for them anyway. Anyway, let's move on.
Okay.
Today, we're going to be joined by Bruce Roberson. Bruce is an Air Force veteran who served in Southeast Asia during the Vietnam War. We're also going to talk to him about his experience there, as well as his transition story and his current entrepreneurial ventures. We're going to be right back with Bruce right after the break.
The American Legion is raising awareness about PTSD and veteran suicide by offering hope, camaraderie, and support.
Be the one to help end veteran suicide.
The goal of the American Legion's Be the One campaign is to destigmatize asking for mental health support.
Be the one to ask a veteran in your life how they're doing.
Be the one who saves one veteran.
Go to betheone.org and help the American Legion end veteran suicide.
Will you be the one?
All right, today we're going to be joined by Bruce Roberson. Bruce, welcome to the Tango Alpha Lima podcast experience. You are in for a treat. I see like Ashley and I were matching shirts today. You are not, but yours is way cooler. Can you give us a tour of your shirt, please?
Absolutely. I'm a dog man, and I guess we're going to be talking about dogs today. This shirt, I think, is very apropos. You probably can't read it, but I'll go through what it says. The type is a German Shepherd. The fire mode is on command. The size is 60 to 90 pounds of defense. The ammo is razor sharp teeth. The legs are propelled at 30 miles an hour. The tail is freedom exhaust. Markings are markings of justice. The ears are to enjoy the national anthem. The nose is to sniff out the lack of patriotism, and the mouth is freedom enforced at 238 pounds per square inch. So that kind of speaks to the admiration I have for this animal.
Well, if you'll excuse me for a minute, I have a wall I have to run through after being motivated by that. That's amazing. Yeah. Ooh, stinking raw. All right. Our friend, in case she forgot, Ashley always starts with the first question. And we haven't gone away from that. So Ashley, you have a first question?
I do. So I'm interested in how you got started as a military canine handler. I know that it's a selective process. I'm curious about the time and space in which you became a canine handler, or how canine handling influenced your military career.
Good question. When I went in the service in 1967, and I know you don't remember, you weren't born, but at that time the Vietnam War was right at the heights, and I was in school, but they had a draft, and they were drafting people out of school, and my number was coming up. So I said, okay, I'm going to end up maybe in the Marines or the Green Berets on the front lines at Khe Sanh or someplace like that. So why don't I try to cast my own fate a bit? So I joined the Air Force, and I said, well, maybe I can be a pilot or air traffic control or something like that and be in a nice safe spot. So I went to basic training at Joint Base Lackland in Lackland Air Force Base in San Antonio, Texas. And then I went through the basic training, which was pretty rigorous. Maybe not Paris Island, but it was still pretty rigorous at that time. Then I went through combat training and they needed dog handlers. So I was selected to go through the patrol dog training at Lackland Air Force Base. So I spent about 3 months doing that. And, you know, I kind of actually liked it because I grew up being a dog lover and, you know, saw what these animals were capable of. And it was challenging. So I decided to do that. So I got qualified in being a dog handler. But my first duty station wasn't a place where they needed dogs. So, but I was qualified to be a dog handler.
All right. So, oh, go ahead. Ashley, you got more?
No, I was just going to say, I think that's fascinating. So you said you were there for... The training itself was 3 months, and that was in addition to your basic and then your individual training, or because it was...
Altogether, it was about 3 to 4 months because I went through basic training, which was 6 weeks, and then dog training, which was about 6 weeks. Plus, I went through combat training as well. Well, actually came back to do that. And then I shipped out to NORAD in Colorado, which is the underground complex, which is the North American Air Defense Command. And I was there in the security forces at NORAD for until I received orders to ship out to Southeast Asia. And that's when the dog handling and the real kind of, pardon my expression, shit hit the fan. So I actually was stationed up in northern Thailand, right on the Mekong River across from Laos. And that was during Nixon's secret war, if you guys have heard of that. We were supposedly, there was speculation that we had combat activities in cross borders in Laos and Cambodia and areas like that. When there was an agreement between the US and the Vietnamese, there would be no incursions into those areas. However, they did and we did. So I was at a special operations base with a 56 Special Operations Squadron. Also there was contingents of SOG troops, as well as a CIA. And we had a major computer base there, probably the largest computer in the country, including the United States at the time. And we were monitoring traffic from North Vietnam through the Ho Chi Minh Trail, which was running down through Laos into Cambodia, and then armaments going into Vietnam. And we were actually dropping listening devices on the Ho Chi Minh Trail. And we had captured Russian and Chinese trucks, so we could listen and record on the computers of big tapes, not like computers today, what was going on. So we were responsible being with the 56 Special Operations Squadron, the security division, with securing this these assets up in northern Thailand on the Laotian border. In fact, some of our pilots from our base were captured, and the enemy learned about this secret operation that we had with this listening device. So we became a very big target for the communists who were in Thailand, somewhere in Thailand, Laos, and of course, North Vietnam. So that was an interesting assignment, and we were there protecting that, as well as jumping on a Jolly Green Giant at moment's notice, flying across the Mekong River into Laos to jump out and protect assets that were down, planes that were shot down over there. I have one picture going back in time. I don't know if you guys can see that.
Yeah.
But that's on a PSP runway. I happened to be off that day, so I had the only civilian clothes I had on. But if you notice my feet, it was military shoes. But anyway, that's fully loaded A1E Sandy, ready to go on a run over on the Ho Chi Minh Trail, and that's napalm.
Wow.
So we were in a strategic location. In fact, I think I can point this out here. This is where we were. This is the Mekong River, and this is our base. And it would take about 2 minutes to get over into Thaket, Laos, and the Ho Chi Minh Trail. The armaments were running down through Laos into Vietnam and Cambodia. And on a straight line from where I was living, I could be in North Vietnam, and it's less than 200 miles, a short flight, helicopter or aircraft. So we had a lot of operations going on when we weren't supposed to. Again, Air America, CIA, and a lot of SOG guys were based there as well. So we were doing some kinky stuff back in those days.
Well, so I imagine that while you're over there doing that sort of thing, because you said that wasn't the planned route for you. So did you have to spin up and get a clearance, and were you over there on your own? So like, if you got caught, the government was going to disavow you and not admit that you were over there. Like, how secret was this, and what precautions and things did you have to take?
Well, none of the pilots nor us or any of the planes that we had any emblems or markings on them at all. So there was no identifiers that this was the USA or flags or anything like that. So it was extremely secretive. The media at that time knew nothing about it. And of course, the politicians would deny that we were actually involved, but we were there. And if you, a thought comes to mind that when the chopper takes you and it doesn't land because it's usually swampy rice paddy or something, and you have to jump out at least waist deep, you feel, and you don't know when they're coming back. You just have to secure the area, and it's you and maybe one or two other security forces guys, along with some indigenous people or Thai guards, people that speak Vietnamese or Laotian or Thai. And you've never felt so insignificant in your life. You're on your own, buddy. You know, you have to cover your ass.
Well, that kind of brings me to our pivot point here. I'm curious, that's a very varied, see how I did that there, a very varied career that you had in the military. And I'm wondering now, that collective experience, how would you describe it shaping the rest of your life?
I won't exaggerate at all here, but to tell you that now and throughout my life, I've considered that experience that I had in a war zone like that is a cornerstone that shaped my determination to make something out of myself. I came up as a kid, I didn't have much. My parents, I didn't have a trust fund. I didn't have a college fund. You know, five kids, working class father who served in World War II, North Africa with Patton and Burma. And it wasn't, you went to Southeast Asia for 1 year. If you survived, you come back. You went till it was over. And he spent 10 years, a lot of time at Bragg, but most of the time in with the forces in Asia and in North Africa. So it really could break you or it can make you. And I said, I'm not going to let it break me. And so I used that. When I came back and went back to school, I was maybe 4 years older than everybody else in that second half of the freshman class. And to me, it wasn't a place you go and play and have fun and get drink beer and belong to a fraternity, couldn't afford that. But it was a job for me. I'm getting through this and I'm gonna go out and make my career. So it was just another duty station for me. So everything I did throughout my professional career, and I've worked for the best corporations in the world, General Electric, IBM, McDonnell Douglas Corporation, now Boeing, McKesson Corporation, I'm still working today, believe it or not, for a high-tech company out of Boston. And everything that I did, everything now, any challenges that I've had pale into insignificance compared to that. And I use that as the benchmark to measure everything.
Well, I thought maybe you and I were going to have something in common until you threw McDonald or Douglas after McDonald. I thought we both worked for McDonald's. But I'm kidding. I never worked for McDonald's. Thanks so much for that. It is kind of inspirational. And I love the way that you tied some of what you did in your past to help you through your present at the time, especially going through school. Because I remember telling my counselor, I've heard of people not getting their classes and it takes them 5 or 6 years to get through university. I'm telling you right now, 4 years from now, I'm walking off of this campus, degree or no degree. So let's figure it out now, like the map that we have to do. Yeah. And I do think that age played into that because I already felt behind. Mm-hmm. You know, they talk about the
right.
They talk about the service gap that, right. You know, you have that, whether it's 4, 8, 10, whatever it is, years where you're behind everybody. We even talk about that here in Hollywood, the service gap where, you know, you don't come here at 18, you don't make those connections and you have to catch up. So it's that mission vision, I hope resonates right. with a lot of people out there. All right. I've spoken enough.
Jeff, besides that, without the GI Bill, I could have never done it either. You know, so many ways the experience and the financial support paid for itself. And, you know, it caused me a lot of restless nights and, you know, being shot at and missed and shit at and hit sometimes. But, you know, survived it and it made me stronger.
Wait, I can't let that go. That's amazing. Shot at. All right. I'm going to remember that one for a long time. Before I go back to Ashley, I just have one quick question. I like to ask this of our Vietnam era veterans, and welcome home, by the way. Sorry for delaying that. How was that college campus experience for you at that time? Because we hear a lot, you know.
I couldn't relate. You know, I found a companion who had been in the Air Force as well. And we just kind of hung out and lived in our own world, had a lot of the same classes, you know, but the kids were in a different world. You know, they were 4 years younger and I can't blame them. They didn't have to go through that. I wouldn't want them to have to go through that. But the college life was a job. It was totally a job to me. I ended up on the dean's list. I ended up getting a academic scholarship through merit while I was there, plus, which really helped when all you were getting was $500 a month from the GI Bill and you had to support your living arrangement and everything else. But I can't say it was like, I have a son and a daughter. My son is a mechanical engineer. My daughter is last year in college, University of Florida. And they've had the fraternity experience, a sorority experience. They haven't had to go through that. And I wouldn't want them to, you know, I'd rather they take an officer route or something like that if they decide to go in the military and don't have to go through all the grunt stuff that I went through. But, I doubt they, you know, ever have to serve. It wasn't, to answer your question specifically, it wasn't a normal college experience, a social experience.
Well, I guess I was kind of aiming toward, you didn't get protested or?
No. Although, you know, I came back a little bit with my head down because at that time, you know, we were baby killers or, you know, the war wasn't very popular. People, we didn't get to board the airplanes first like the guys do today. Didn't get much thank you for your service, if at all. I often wonder when I'm in the airport now waiting to get on, they say active military members first. I said, what about combat veterans? No, you're not eligible. You know, it's just like, gee, wake up, guys. I mean, you're talking about a whole battery of individuals out here have, you know, given everything they could. So I don't care about getting on the airplane first. It's just the acknowledgement. Don't get me emotional.
Well, don't get me emotional, but becoming emotional. All right, Ashley.
So I just to echo the sentiment, welcome home. I know that you had an unusual experience, you know, having moved through the education piece, right, as a job. This is what needs to happen to get mm-hmm. to end point, right, A to B. Let's pick up on C. What you talked about several of these places that you've been employed mm-hmm. at. Do you have a particular favorite, or how did you kind of stumble into your first employment post degree? And tell us a little bit more about that journey.
Okay, very, very good question. When I was getting out of the service, you know, a lot of the, and this is not meant in a derogatory way, because my brother was a lifer and my nephew was a lifer, but a lot of the lifers would say Rob, they called you Rob. Nobody called you your first name or their whole last name, Rob. Man, you should re-enlist. There's no jobs out there. You're going to get out and get hungry. I said, nope, I'm getting out. I believe in myself. But, you know, internally, I had a lot of anxiety because I didn't know if there were any jobs. I wasn't trained to do anything. I hadn't finished my education. So I said, what in the hell am I going to do to make a living? So I thought about, well, I'll go back to school and healthcare. People are always going to get sick. So, but I didn't want to be a doctor. I didn't want to be a nurse. I didn't want to be a radiology technician. I wasn't much into patient contact. I said, but still healthcare. So what about healthcare administration? That sounds good. And what about this new stuff, this computer stuff, you know, because at that time, the internet didn't exist. Cell phones didn't exist. When you were programming, you were punching on 80 column card punches. You know, to boot a system up, you had to have a boot deck with little holes in it to run it through the system to bring the system up. It wasn't control alt delete. Yeah. So anyway, I decided if I could marry something with these newfangled computers with healthcare, I'll bet you I'll always have a job. So I did. So I got a minor in business administration and computers and a major in healthcare administration. And then I said, okay, got my degree, did an internship at a hospital. I said, well, if I'm going to work in healthcare, I should probably work in a hospital. And I was admitting patients and I worked in the emergency room. And then once I got my degree, I was promoted to budget and cost director of this hospital. And then I got to know the people involved in the computer systems for the hospital. And the company that provided that was, of all companies, McDonnell Douglas Corporation. McDonnell Douglas, who made the F-4 Phantoms, the F-15 Hornets, the F-18 Eagles, the DC-8, DC-9, DC-10. So I said, wow. I talked to the representative. I said, do you think I could get a job with your company? And he said, I don't know. I talked to Herb. Okay, I'll talk to Herb. I went to Atlanta, got a job with McDonnell Douglas Corporation. I was at that time maybe 30 years old, and I started on my way. So all the time, the gap, the lag that I missed, I just went on a trajectory like this. And working for an information technology company, a company that was an $80 billion company back when $80 billion was a lot of money back in, you know, 1980. So that started me on the way in corporate America. Now, I will have to say that I got so enthralled with that and climbing the corporate ladder. I had my chance at last, you know. I'd been a grunt and I've got it. I'm going for it. And my family life suffered at that time because I was traveling all the time and getting involved with implementation of systems. And so I was traveling all the time and I was loving the hell out of it. I got to wear a suit And I got to carry a briefcase, and I felt like for once I was somebody, you know. So I really enjoyed it, and I was right. And it was a very naive way to make a decision. People are going to get sick, and this newfangled computer stuff is going to stick around for a while. I never was without a job. And I always moved around from a McDonnell Douglas to a IBM or something like that, and always made more money. So it was a very naive. I didn't have a counselor. I didn't have parents. Neither of my parents were college graduates. I think my father went through the sixth grade and went off to war, but, you know, figured it out. So got lucky.
A lot of positive forecasting, right? You see a thing, you're like, ooh, I could see how these two would marry together. And then making decision and choices, oftentimes, you know, vets who have gone through even global war on terrorism vets who have gotten out, gone to school, right? If they've made similar, these forecasting decisions that help them and propel right. them forward based on military service experience, treating it like a job. And what you've told me is you've just had an amazing career span where you've got to implement the infrastructure for, it sounds like, a great deal of these companies. Like, I would be very proud, and I'm sure you are very proud of that. That's important, impactful work. And I think as service members, there's a part of your legacy that's there with that.
You're right. And I started out on the implementation side, putting these systems in place, teaching the doctors, the nurses, the technicians, how to utilize information technology. At that time, it was still very rudimentary, even though you were using IBM platforms or digital equipment company platforms. A system that would run an entire 500-bed hospital only had a half a meg of memory in it. You have that much in what? You know, you got more than that in your phone, you know, so it was just, it was a different world, but, you know, I was inside the technology world, and I kind of got in the uplift of that and then changed jobs. And it kind of evolved with the healthcare information technology sector. But again, I think the discipline on getting on the implementation side, a lot of that came through military discipline too. And then one day I made another critical decision. I said, I think I want to go on to the sales side, because those guys, you know, I'm staying up all night implementing software in a hospital, and they call me out of the basement the next day out of the computer room and want me to make a presentation to the administrative staff about a new application. And I said, wait a minute, I haven't shaved. I need a shower. You guys are in a fancy $1,000 suit, and you get to take these people out to dinner. And I'm the one who knows the system. So I want to do what you do. Mm-hmm. So I crossed over from technology side to technology sales. And then I'd never sold anything in my life. I'm not even the chocolate bars in high school for the bands, you know. I was a shy kid. So, and I made that move. I said, but if I know it, so people can perceive if you know about something. So, and then my mm-hmm. sales career just took off, and it made a great living.
It's always nice when authenticity, competency, and confidence all come together, right? And you're in that right place and time where you are developing relationships. That's really what sales are. It's developing relationships with people. You could have the smartest person with the 12 bullet point, but if you can't break it down to be Barney style, and I think that's one of the pleasures of being, you know, prior service, is that you've taken extreme circumstances, pushed them down into these very, very small steps, and then you've been able to communicate those steps.
And I always felt like you needed to sell yourself first, your company second, and your product last, because they're buying from you. You are the company incarnate in the flesh. And, you know, then you talk about your company. Am I doing business with a stable company? And then your product, because everybody is going to claim their product is the most great and wonderful. And you have to have good references. But that was the kind of the echelon for me: sell myself, sell my company, sell my product.
I was just going to ask about entrepreneurship. How was the discovery from, you know, boots on ground, you know, Ho Chi Minh Trail to, you know, school, like, you know, buried in books to landing this job, right? And then the entire healthcare and tech entrepreneurship, like how, at what point did you think, oh man, I think I am like a bit of an entrepreneur. I'm a bit of a mogul in this space. Like, did it ever have that critical moment where you're like, oh wow, I did that? Or,
yeah. You know, there's always, I remember, you know, you were involved in, I got involved when I was at IBM in Baxter, and they would decided to sell our company. And I was a vice president, and I was on the team to kind of get rid of people that we didn't need. You know, when you do a merger and acquisition, you kind of shed off, well, we don't need these. We've got duplication here, whatever. I was on the team to help merge them together. By that time, I had gotten involved with someone in the organization, a lady in the organization, and it was starting to be visible. And I said, it's a good time for me to you and you to separate, because this is not, you know, a good thing. Not that anything wrong with us, it's just visible. And so I said, why don't you do this? I said, you know this aspect, and I know this aspect, and I have contacts. Why don't we create a company focused on information technology research in the healthcare industry? And we did, and we started that in my house. 30 some years later, it's still a viable company, multi-million dollar company. And that was my first endeavor into the entrepreneurial world. Also during the dot-com years, I'm jumping ahead a bit, I had an opportunity to get involved with a dot-com startup in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. We took public on the NASDAQ. So I got to do a lot of Wall Street stuff. And the stock went through the roof. And I had a contract there and sold the stock and pocketed a lot of money. And then I started another company that was basically kind of a precursor to Facebook. That one didn't make it, but it was a great idea. We did a capital raise through a private placement, and we were just kind of ran out of gas. And then I've started two new companies lately. One is a podcast company called Express All Health and Wellness Podcast. And my wife really runs that. And she brings in healthcare professionals from different disciplines to focus on, she says, living longer, loving longer, and having a happy life. And she's very fit, and she keeps me fit, even at 75 years old. You can't see what's behind here, but it's a whole gym. And we work out, and we stay healthy. And hey, you know, I heard that most people that are 70 years old, or older, if they fall on the floor, they can't get themselves up. That's not me. I'm not going to let that happen. You know, so I think there's a certain degree of control that we have over our health condition. So I emphasize wellness, not sickness, although our society emphasizes sickness because we spend $5 trillion a year on the total healthcare spend in this country. We rank 35th in the world in total health condition. So we're making a bad investment because we're not getting the return. If we focused on wellness instead of sickness, we'd be a lot better off as a nation. President Kennedy, you guys don't remember this, you weren't born, I do. I attended one of his speeches, Kenan Stadium in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. He was a big proponent of youth fitness. And, you know, the kids were fit. They got into it. They exercised. They went out on the playground. So the whole nation was about fitness, the Peace Corps. So I think maybe it's because of the devices that we have, sitting on the sofa too much, eating too much junk food. Our kids are not in the condition they should be. Our population is not in the condition. And yet we spend more money than the next five countries together on the healthcare spend. If the U.S. healthcare was an economy, it would be the fourth largest economy in the world, over $4 trillion, expected to be $6 trillion by 2028. So we got to do something differently. And I know I'm on the inside. I see it and I live it. So, and my wife lives it. And that's why we did the podcast. It's Expresso Health and Wellness Podcast. And each week she brings healthcare professionals, usually doctors, doctors in functional medicine, doctors who are into compounding pharmacy You know, you go to a regular retail drugstore, you get a script for a drug, that may not be right for you. It may not be compounded exactly for your body chemistry. So we use special compounding pharmacies. They exist out there. So, you know, we do hormone replacement therapy under a doctor's supervision. I'm 75. Men start losing testosterone at a very early age. So I take testosterone injections under doctor supervision, get regular blood tests. So you can be healthier. We can live longer. We can live a healthier life. And I would say it's just better aging, not anti-aging. It's just better way of aging.
Well, I can certainly say this, Bruce, you are going to inspire a lot of listeners and viewers because you're a health advocate, you're dedicated to your wellness, you are a warrior, a scholar, entrepreneur. You have had an amazing life. You have done so many things. And I'm sure that for each bit that you've shared with us today, you're gonna impact someone. Someone's gonna say, you know what? If Bruce can have this determination mindset and he's, you know, hitting the gym with his wife at 75, like, I'm here for it. I don't have any excuses. It's time. The time is now. So I'll throw it over to Jeff. I know you have some thoughts.
Well, I wanted to make sure that we got in the Express Soul Health and Wellness, and that you also have a companion company. What can you tell us about Express Soul Coffee?
This is our newest venture and extremely exciting. We just launched about 2 weeks ago, went live. We've been working on it for 2 years. First, you have to build an e-commerce platform, and mm-hmm. you have to find an organization that's really competent in that area. So we vetted out about four different companies and finally found a company in Aventura, Florida. And really, it's headed by a guy who's a Russian guy by nationality, and has a few Ukrainian programmers in. They do wonderful work, as well as some Hispanic people as well. They do beautiful work. So they completed our e-commerce platform. You call it a website in e-commerce because you can go on and order what you want, and you know, things of that nature. You can order bundles, you can order individual blends. And my wife and I have been to Colombia. She's Colombian, and we go to Colombia. She's from the coffee region of Colombia. It's called Manizales. It's just outside of Medellin, and high mountainous area. So the coffees in Colombia grow at like 12,000 feet in the mountainous areas. They can't get machines up there to machine harvest them like they do in Brazil. So you can only hand pick the red cherries, the ones that are ripe, and you don't get leaves or branches or green coffee cherries involved in it, like in the flatlands of Brazil, where most of these drive-through coffee shops basically harvest in mass amounts, over roast it, and then fill it full of sugar and cream and all everything else and charge you $8.95. Ours is really gourmet coffee that through this e-commerce site, you can order and it'll be delivered with UPS directly to your door. We just sent some to San Diego, 3 days from Miami to San Diego. And if you do the calculation, it works out to be per bag about $1.25 per cup for gourmet coffee, not over roasted, mass produced coffee from the low countries of Brazil, but from the high countries. And one region that we have a blend from is these indigenous people at 12,000 feet, the only tip in the Andes Mountains of Colombia, where it snows. And these indigenous people harvest the coffee for us. And then we have it imported into Miami, and then we roast it here. So we have the front end, which is the e-commerce platform that you order it. You can read about the product. You can see our value proposition. My wife even has a 3-minute video that explains the whole process for this coffee harvesting and where it comes from and why she decided to do this. And then we roast it, we bag it, and we ship it. So that's been live about 2 weeks now. And wow, we're into the marketing stage at this point, the digital marketing stage. So we're all on Meta and Instagram, which is part of Meta, and we're applying marketing dollars. We have an editor for our podcast and is doing some ads for us, who's in Manila in the Philippines. a great person. We found her through another resource that we have. So we deal when Paul is working at night while we're sleeping, and then we have a few hours crossover that we can talk, but it's a wonderful relationship. So anyway, those are two relatively new initiatives. The podcast started in January. The coffee company started 2 weeks ago. And thank you very much for asking.
Well, I'm hoping that I don't personally drink coffee. No offense. I don't like coffee. I think both of the other people here, super producer Holly, could fund your next purchase with her coffee habit.
Yeah. So that's espressocoffee.com. Try it. It is not like military coffee, Jeff. And you know, I told a story. I'm out on the outer perimeter, and the deuce and a half comes around with a coffee run and gives me coffee so I won't fall asleep and get my throat cut. And I drink it, and I was 18, 19 years old, and it tastes like tar to me, but it was a stimulant that's going to keep me awake. I didn't realize coffee should taste good either until I met my wife and started drinking kind of gourmet coffee, if you will, and it tastes good.
So it is Express Soul. I imagine somebody somewhere is going to make a Express Soul espresso.
Exactly.
And then say that 10 times fast and you get a discount.
We also make the K-cups, if you will, that goes in the machine. Some people don't want to. Yeah, exactly. Some people don't want to grind their beans up. You could order ground already. It would be shipped that way. Or you could order whole beans. Some people like to grind their beans or use the K-cups. And we have those as well.
But anyway. All right, so you're 2 weeks in. You just don't stop. You're keep moving forward, keep pushing forward. And I love all of it. So I want to thank you personally for being on the show. Again, I want to echo the welcome home sentiment. And just thank you for like your entire career, not just serving in the military, but supporting the military after you were out. And now maybe, just maybe, you're going to support some people in the military with good coffee.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And thank you guys very much. It's been an honor for me to be on your podcast. I think I said this earlier. I'm a member of the Vietnam Veterans of America, the Thai, Laotian, Cambodian Brotherhood, and also Together We Serve, soon to be a member of the American Legion as well. I've never taken that initiative, but I'm going to. And I tell you, your podcast is a major contributor to me wanting to do that, and the interaction I've had with you guys. I'm going to be walking into some American Legion houses here in South Florida.
All right. Well, have a good tour of those. Okay. There's big ones, small ones. They're all very different, and they have different feels. So find the one that feels right for you. So again, thank you so much for being here. We're going to continue this conversation, not with Bruce, but about Bruce, right after you take your espresso coffee break. We'll see you in a minute.
Thank you.
Advancing the vision.
Advancing the vision.
The American Legion educates, mentors, and leads new generations of Americans.
We are veterans strengthening America. We are the American Legion.
I am refreshed after that break. Let's get right back into this. What are your takeaways, Ashley, from Bruce?
I was going to say, you clearly didn't take your espresso shot, but yeah. I'm not a coffee drinker either. However, I will say this about Bruce. He has done so many amazing things, right? Entrepreneur, saw a need in like healthcare. The fact that we, in our first topic of the day, talked about the increased like aging population of veterans and health and wellness, and taking both like, you know, personal responsibility and having discipline and determination, like all of these different attributes that have come from service collectively have been harnessed in the power of Bruce. He's like a Hulk. Like, he's not smashing stuff, but he's like smashing records and goals. It's wild to me. Like, I'm super happy for him and everything that he's accomplished and contributed in his entire life, right?
Yep. I love it. I love it. It's like, I love when a plan comes together. That's from something. And it's like his whole life was a plan and it's now coming together. And he makes me almost want to have a cup of that coffee, but it's never going to happen. Never going to happen. I just can't drink the coffee.
But I what will... if it was the Fountain of Youth and we would solve all of our woes?
Coffee?
I mean, maybe. He was saying that they were picking the beans from some remote place. Who knows? Maybe there's something in the water there.
And the red
and then by default. Like
cherry. Maybe coffee isn't as bad as I thought. All right.
If you like the content of this podcast and you haven't subscribed yet, please subscribe right here and hit the notification button. Also, follow us in all our social media outlets. Leave your comments. We love to hear from you. And give us a 5-star review. Thanks for your support. And again, use your promo code FREEDOM for 25% off in the Express All Coffee. Also, remember that free shipping, convenient, goes to the doorstep at your convenience at your house. All the free shipping on the orders over $50. Again, www.expressolcoffee.com, the best coffee available in the market for your health. Thanks, and until next time, remember, health is wealth for the body, mind, and soul. Take care.
Thank you very much for listening. And if you like the information that we shared with you today, please subscribe to the Express Soul Health and Wellness podcast and follow us in the social media outlets of your choice. Until next time, please remember, health is wealth for the body, mind, and soul.